Now, over the past couple of weeks, we'd been starting a journey through the Minor Prophets, and today we come to the book of Jonah. As part of my previous sermons, I tried to retell the stories, and today I try to retell the whole of the Jonah story from Jonah's perspective. I ran. I can't deny it. My fateful excursion to Tarshish. The fish and all. It's well documented in Sunday school classes, in illustrated Bibles, and animated videos. But I don't think it's out of the ordinary, even for an Old Testament prophet, to want to avoid conflict. What would you have done? We live beside Assyria, the monster of the north. You wouldn't like the Assyrians either. Nobody does. The inhumanity of their legal system shows just how much they dislike each other. Did you know people have their ears and noses and lips cut off for relatively minor offences? Husbands are permitted to beat their adulterous wives and to castrate their lovers. People who commit capital offences are usually skewered on poles and left to slowly die by the city walls. There's a reason why Nineveh is called the city of blood. The Assyrians are barbaric. And when it comes to war, they've invented another scale of brutality. They skin their captives alive and create mountains of their severed heads. They cut open pregnant women and throw babies and children from the tops of city walls onto the rocks below. Their aim is to spread terror among their enemies. And it works. It's not been easy. We first lost land through the post-war annexation, and then we lost Samaria. I mean, well, what's next? Jerusalem? Oh, don't get me wrong. I'd gladly listen to God and go to that capital city if I was backed by 10,000 men. March with an army to Nineveh and break their colonial grip. Who wouldn't have wanted that? But to go with empty words, why? To proselytize? To evangelize? What could I possibly say to such an evil oppressor? Why would another government listen to me? It's not like you have your ticket booked for Westminster then. I mean, what possible precedent is there for such foolish action? Oh, sure, bring up Moses. You think I haven't heard that before? Yes, I know he spoke truth to power, confronted Pharaoh, and well, you're right. He showed inspired leadership. But look, I'm not Moses. I'm Jonah. I don't have a burning bush and a back pocket full of plagues or pestilence or some dramatic salvation story through the water. Well, I guess I have my own water story, but that came later. It felt at the time like I was staring down the enemy alone. And I did what anyone would do. I took my Foreign Office advice and skipped the country. I was due a holiday anyhow. A friend of mine has a timeshare, so I left and did what was best for me. Call it personal time. But believe me, I'm no coward. It's not like my plan was risk-free. I had to take a wooden boat to Tarshish, 800 BC. Not the most reliable vessel, not the most hospitable means of travel. In other words, it's no surprise that the evils of the sea, so merciless and unpredictable, might stir up a great storm on my trip. No surprise that the boat was so vulnerable. And when the first rogue wave crashed over the bow, really hit me, I could die. Isn't it others who get sick, go missing? You hear about those things on the news, but me, not me. Swallowed by the sea? Is there a worse way to... Well, you imagine the panic. The captain turning the vessel against the wind as it took on water. The first mate from the crow's nest above yelling, "Starboard, turn it the other way!" And the crew on deck rowing frantically to bring the ship back to land. One man was nearly thrown overboard. I caught him. His eyes and mine met in stared terror. "What have you done, Jonah, to cause God's anger?" he said. It's true, at such a moment, images of your past flash through your mind instantaneously. It's true that as the world strangely stands still, the adrenaline in your veins doesn't. And it's true that you can have a crisis of faith in a second. I knew suddenly that I was running from something much larger than myself. I knew for certain it was my fault, and I knew others might die because of me. "Throw me over, do it!" I cried, the most difficult words I've ever said. I don't really know what happened next. I wasn't conscious long, spinning and diving, tumbling and sucking in by the water. I must have been moments from drowning. But I came to, miraculously, inside a moist, fleshy, filthy, smelly cavern, a dark womb, tucked up closely in a fetal position. Thank God my limbs were warm. I was breathing, but I was trapped, literally entombed in the belly of hell, in the heart of the sea, alone with my fears, my cries, my screaming. People talk about the dark night of the soul, a gripping spiritual crisis of confusion and anguish, of God's apparent disappearance. Had I actually managed to escape God? A painful, purgatorial 3 days. And then sudden patterned movements, contractions, convulsions, upheaval woke me. Deliverance. As if I was being birthed again, driven from the depths of a fish's belly and spewed upon the beach, naked, entering the world another time. I was alone. I only had God to care for me like my mother. And this time I clung to his every word. "Get up, go to Nineveh, and for 40 days proclaim the message that I will tell you." I hated even the Assyrians' food, let alone their social customs. But I learned to relish speaking truth to empire, doing outrageous public demonstrations to get the king's attention and to publicly chastise him. I felt somewhat spiritually empowered to preach destruction, invigorated to contemplate their doom. From my soapbox, I preached fire and brimstone. "You shall all be like the snails that dissolve into slime." And for 40 days, I dreamt about that apocalyptic end, when God would give the Ninevites what they deserved. Yes, if my enemy will suffer, I'll be willing to preach. If the God who saves me will destroy them, I'll preach long, dramatic sermons. If God will finally act justly, I'll preach loud and clear. And oh boy, did they hear me well. Days of fasting, weeks of embellished lament, an entire city in sackcloth and ashes. Good try, I thought. Well done. I couldn't sleep that 40th night, hours before the day of reckoning. I was that excited. I took my perch on top of a hill outside the city wall with binoculars in hand. I waited for the inferno. 100 years of political corruption, immoral behavior, violent assault, colonial rule, and economic injustice, all to finally come to an end. My camera and tripod were at the ready. But God did nothing. Not one thing. No lightning bolt, no explosion, no pestilence or plague, no fire, nothing. All I wanted to see, but nothing. By evening, the first voices emerged from the city center, joined by other voices from the suburbs and instruments. They were singing, imagine it, louder and louder. Soon I saw the banners and streamers and balloons, the ticker tape and the bunting, a parade of revelers and celebrants, awash in confetti. Like the whole community was alive again, swept up from the deep and put back on shore. Reborn, as it were. The very reason I didn't go to Nineveh in the first place. Why God can't be trusted. I didn't come here to witness the salvation of a damned evil people. That night, when the fireworks had ended, I grabbed God by the collar. What are you doing? I pinned God to the ground. Where is justice? I gave God a right hook. This isn't fair. Like Jacob of old, I wrestled all night. I woke late at noon the next day to incredible heat. Heat like only a ball of fire could make. So before opening my eyes, I managed an angered smile. Maybe I had miscalculated God's timing. Maybe today was the day. For a moment, I lavished licking the sweat from my face and my building excitement, competing with my labored breathing. With an inner eye, I imagined the firestorm, the city below in ruins. But imagination can be a curse. The sun such a fooler. The city stood as before. Their air conditioning units humming anonymously. I cursed the metropolis. I cursed the heat and I cursed God. Why are you so gracious? After exhausting all my profanities, I sat down, uncomfortably at first, but then with my back against a tree, a bush I hadn't even noticed before. How unexpected, I thought, to have shade on a day like today. But the heat was unrelenting. I awoke the next day to a sultry east wind and a stifling sun, and the tree was dead. How dare God remove my one saving grace? Oh, calm down, Jonah, you're going to say. Look on the bright side, you're going to say. God was always going to be loving and forgiving. Don't you think I know all of that? Of course I had an inkling what God was going to do, to be kind and merciful and loving. That's why I'm so angry. I mean, really angry. Sat there in the heat of the desert, my anger boiling inside me. Heat everywhere, evil people should come to wicked ends. And to be honest, that's what some of you think too. Admit it. But oh no, God wanted to forgive them. Longed for them to have a new start, crowned them with mercy. It makes me sick. I had sat and watched and I had waited for something to happen. A lightning bolt to come down from the sky. An earthquake to swallow them up. Anything to show divine righteous anger. But no. It would appear that God was far more interested in dealing with me. So I'm the one who gets a nice shady plant, and then a worm, and then a wind, all sent for my benefit. All sent to engage with me, because clearly God hadn't finished with me yet. God had a point to make, and he was going to make it. I know. You wanted there to be a happy ending. You want us to make up, God and me. You want me to revel in the goodness and the grace of God and to realize that it was all my fault. You want me to be pleased for the people of Nineveh and for all of the loose ends to be tied up nicely. Well, I'm sorry. That's not the way this ends. This ends with me being angry, looking down on a city that God has saved. What are tens of thousands of lives against one? God will say. Why can't you be happy? You've done my will. Well, I'm sorry, the anger is still there and I need to find a way to deal with it. Anger aimed at love, at mercy, at a God who forgives. I know it sounds petty and cruel, but isn't that what we all have to deal with? Emotions that betray us, thoughts of cruelty that threaten to drown us, a complex relationship with a loving, forgiving creator that takes a lifetime to work out, a God who surprises and shocks with love every day. So don't be angry with me for being human. I've got enough anger for all of us. But in that space, it was God who spoke to me, calling for another birth. This one perhaps more painful than any one before. Is it right to be angry about a single tree? God was now wrestling with me. A tree that you did not even own. Oh, I knew this pattern of questioning. Like I was again being undressed, exposed before God himself. Should I not be concerned about Nineveh, 120,000 people I made in my image, their cattle and livestock? Oh, I had the feeling of nakedness again. How could I argue? Is it even unfair to be gracious? Said God. I was sent with a message from God. Blessing or curse. And those evil, twisted people of Nineveh chose blessing. And he blesses those who respond to his love. And God has a message for me: self-absorption and hatred, or love and forgiveness. Love for even the most evil people of this world. What about you? What's God's message to you? How will God instruct and discipline you in his ways? Oh, I felt myself sinking again into the womb, that fleshy, moist, filthy, smelly cavern where I wait. Perhaps for 3 days again. Or maybe 3 months, or even 3 years. I wait on God's grace, God's mercy, to be born again, to be born anew. Amen.